The Lock-In Podcast is brought to you by Rotocloud, the all-in-one solution for managing hospitality teams. Rotocloud lets you plan and share rotas, record attendance, and manage your team's annual leave, all in less time than it takes to make a brew. It also makes life easier for your staff, allowing them to check their rotas, request annual leave, and even pick up extra shifts, all through the Rotocloud mobile app. Start your 30-day free trial today by visiting rotocloud.com/lock-in. Hello and welcome to the latest session of the Lock-In Podcast, episode 10 in fact, so we've reached double figures.
Who'd have thought it?
And still on air, it's a miracle.
Doesn't mean anyone's listening.
that's very depressing, thinking that James would think positively. So we're back again in the shuttered Lockhart Tavern with my co-host James Cuthbertson and Heath Ball, although Heath is once again making strange noises at the other end because he is phoning it in from Highgate, and that's probably a metaphor for your life, Heath, isn't it? Phoning it in?
What?
James has been hard at work down in the Lockhart Tavern, which came as something of a shock and surprise to his colleagues, but not to his wife, who's always found him hard work.
Here we go again. That's 10 of these.
I mean, they can't see you shaking your head. This is the thing. I know I'm going to run out, aren't I?
Yes.
Ways to insult the pair of you. So don't forget to subscribe to this series on iTunes or Spotify and the various other platforms you can get this on. Leave your reviews and thoughts of future topics for us to discuss, and any particular insults you'd like to hurl at James and Heath, because obviously I'm going to run out fairly soon. So for this episode of the podcast, we're going to be focusing on finance. It's all about the money, and we'll have another special guest joining us, Kevin Stewart from Mid-Sussex Council, who'll be giving us some practical advice when it comes to accessing support. But before we move on to that, let's take a look at some of the issues that have cropped up this week. So guys, I mean, first of all, how's the week been for you trade-wise? Has been anything notable? Has it gone okay?
No, it's our second week of takeaway and delivery at the Lockhart. It was stronger than the week before. And we're getting used to it too, because obviously not a takeaway business or a delivery business. So you have to do a bit of learning. I'm still amazed how every time I phone for an Indian takeaway, which is fairly regularly, they just say yes. They just say, and it gets done somewhere. We've been working on different slots and timings, but yeah, they're just obviously much better prepared than we are.
Well, they've been doing it for a lot longer, haven't they? So I suppose.
Do you mean as a country, or do you mean as a?
I meant as a takeaway business. That's the focus
of
their business. What trap you were laying?
Yeah.
But no, I mean, in all seriousness, why don't you go and chat to a Indian takeaway and go, how the bloody hell do you do it?
Because I probably want to do stuff on time. Any time I go there, it's always late.
Yeah, but even then, I think that it's all in the microwave, isn't it? They have all the sauces there. They have all the different ingredients. So chicken madras, get chicken, add it to the madras sauce. You know what I mean? It's not like it's rocket science. So they just put it in the microwave, ping it, throw it in the pot, send it off.
You just casually malign the entire industry there, Heath. They're all pinging the sling, says Heath Ball.
When you say they, Ed...
An industry.
Okay.
So let's look at some of the things we've seen this week. Moving well away from anything like that. We've heard today, or certainly it's been leaked, which means it is true. Obviously, that they're certainly not going to end the lockdown or ease any restrictions till Easter at the earliest. And Priti Patel, our delightful Home Secretary, I have to say that, in case she shouts at me, has said it's too early to talk about easing of restrictions at the same time as she leaks news of easing of restrictions to the Daily Mail.
She reminds me of my ex-wife, because every time she walks into the room, she thinks she wants to fight. She's got that sort of walk about her. Do you know what I mean?
Your ex-wife doesn't listen to the silence.
There's no warmth there, is there? You can see about all those bullying complaints. There must have been some in there, right?
There's something in the eyes, isn't there? Something in the eyes. But before we completely land ourselves with a defamation suit, I mean, what do we think about that? I mean, what's your reaction to the idea that we're only going to start seeing those tears coming back in March? I mean, that means Easter's pretty much done for, isn't it?
I think that's what we thought, though. No, I think that's pretty much what we expected. I think the bigger worry is May. You know, if it goes to May, really, which is people... Maybe they talked about May a couple of weeks back so that we'd think that March and Easter was okay. Never know what's going on there.
Softening the blow. Maybe. I think the... But having said that, though, that's still going to be a thing, because if they're talking about the restrictions starting to ease in March, and you look at the way they've done it previously, you know, the restrictions, so what will happen is everything else can open up.
Stores, etc.
But hospitality in March is what
we'll be the last one.
They've said we're going to be the last. They've admitted that, haven't they?
Yeah, it'll be tiers, and then we'll be able to do this, and then, do you know what I mean? We'll be a summer of tier, basically lockdown in a really horrible way, and then we'll just limp our way through to the vaccines getting out, and then probably next year before we look at any sort of normality.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's a second winter. We'll see a load off this winter, and then it'll be next winter. No, I do. I think that'll be it. I do. But if you look at the flu, a few epidemics before, we haven't had a bad one for a couple of years. There's some like real dry tinder, you know, and they've just really been caught out on this. So I think it's I think you're bang on right, Heath. I think there's probably another harsh winter to come yet, you know, despite the vaccines, particularly with.
Lucky we've got so much support from the government. Honestly, I don't know what to do with all this money they keep on giving me.
Spend it on a new track and trace system.
I mean, thinking about money, and obviously this episode is going to be looking at money generally across the piece, but we've also had the insurance court case come through. I mean, what's reaction to that from your perspective, you two?
Well, I was insured. I should have been insured. And that now they've come back to me and said, no, we've done the figures. You broke even in that period, so we're not going to pay you anything. And I'm like, well, hold on. How'd you do your maths? So I'm now currently instructed lawyers to sue my insurance company.
So they're basically trying to get out of it, saying because they didn't pay you when they were supposed to pay you, and you then had to fight your corner and trade and fight for every penny. No, they're not going to.
They count, isn't it?
That's outrageous.
And not only that, they count furlough money as income.
Right.
So even though that's just going out to pay staff, they still count it as an income. They don't take into account my salary. They don't. So I've got I've instructed my lawyer, and we're just going to sue. It's just like a waste of time.
What is your lawyer optimistic about this? I mean, have you?
Yeah, he seems to think we've got a case. He says they're just knocking everybody back, as many people as they can. And obviously they've waited this long by the court cases and appealing it. Who's going to be left? So they're probably just waiting. Okay, we'll get to the end, and we're going to pay these guys.
So what did your insurance cover then? Was it just the red, or was it covering the Lockhart and the Wen?
It was just the red line.
So you didn't take insurance out on any of your other businesses?
No, we did, but we didn't have pandemic insurance, which I had, a business interruption due to a pandemic, which I took out at the red line.
Oh, and why? Well, apart from the rats and everything that you get at that pub, it's a plague-ridden hellhole. But what is? Why did you take pandemic insurance out there?
I think I'd like to say I was clever, but I watched a Bill Gates podcast years ago, TED Talk, and I was doing the renewal for the Red Line. It just came up, and I was just a bit more focused that day, and I ticked that box.
Mm.
Do you know what I mean? So
And lucky you that you did, because it's resulted in a fantastic payout, hasn't it? Sorry.
Well, it's amazing. I'm suing my insurance company. it's capped anyway. There's a limit it can be anyway, so it's never going to be hundreds of thousands of pounds. But it'll pay for something.
Yeah, yeah. So I mean, the other thing that I think we're going to be running something on the MA 500 on this, and perhaps I think we'll do something down the line with this podcast on insurance and get some experts on and talk about this. But one of the things that they're warning about is beware of the PPI style.
The money chasers.
Yeah, the money chasers, the ambulance chasers that are going to be ringing around, so telling you that they can settle your court case or can settle your claim with the insurance company for a nice 30% chunk of it, despite the fact that the court has ruled that they have to pay it.
They have to.
You'll basically just be giving 30% of that money away.
Or an upfront fee.
To somebody for filling out a form.
Yeah.
Yeah, or an upfront fee, yeah. So, I mean, that's I think that's a key message we need to be getting out there, sort of be careful of these things. If you're struggling, speak to, if you've got a broker, I guess, speak to them, speak to people in the trade that you know and trust. But, yeah, don't sign up to one of these ambulance chasing businesses. So the other thing I saw actually that I was going to flag was one MP has called for a U-turn on the takeaway booze ban, which was quite nice to see.
Did you say 100? Did you say 100 MPs?
No, one. One.
Oh, one. Just okay, one. Cool,
yeah. So lone voice in the wilderness. But who knows? Maybe it will.
Maybe as many as two will do it.
Yeah, that's as many listeners as we've got, isn't it? Yeah.
The first one or the second one, or maybe had.
But I mean, that's a positive, isn't it? Let's try and be positive.
Christ, you really are looking for it, and I guess we'll go with you.
I'm prizing up those rocks and looking under them.
He or she probably just lives close to a pub and wants to go and get a couple of beers.
That's probably true. Okay, well, let's move on and dig into some of these financial issues. Hello and welcome back to the Lock-In Podcast. So we are going to be talking finances here. He stopped pulling faces on the end of that webcam. It's not going to put me off in the slightest. So let's talk about finance. Let's be frank. I mean, how screwed are you two?
Both married, so yeah, pretty bad.
Sorry, let me rephrase that. How screwed is your business? I mean, how are the finances? I mean, how honest do you want to be? How honest can you be? I mean, what's the situation for you two?
James, what do you want to say?
I think no one's had it easy. Some have been screwed through no fault of their own, but we scrapped really hard. I mean, scrapped really hard this year. Heath particularly up at the red to innovate probably more than anyone else in the industry. I challenge anyone else to call greater innovation up there. Done a lot down here, completely pivoted the model. But I guess, you know, where you can and where licensees can, everyone's done that. Some with limited success, some with great success. So we've probably built a new following. We've built a takeaway business, a delivery business, pivoted to, you know, to bottle shops and all sorts of stuff to tread water, assisted by things like the rates holiday, and assisted by obviously the initial grant to start with. But it's been really tough. It's been really tough. I think without that, you're definitely going under. There's nothing you can do about it. But we used up retained profit. Not that there's an awful lot of that. Obviously utilised the furlough scheme. So we're just in a situation where we didn't take a loan to start with. But we've just taken one now because the level of uncertainty is still so, you know, so evident, really.
And I mean, what do you envisage using that money for? Or is it just
I'd love to think handing it back in 12 months intact. But as we all know, it's easier to ask for money when you've got money than when you haven't got any money. And we've got a turnover through the businesses, two of the four now. We're showing some gumption, you know, showing some fight. And I'm hoping that will result in, being able to leave that money untouched. Heath, is that fair?
Yeah, it's a fair assessment. I think if we were shut, like, all the way through, I think it'd be a different story. But I think we've been lucky. We've been able to fight our way out and generate revenue and sort of, you know, keep ourselves present in our customers' minds, you know, on social by the stuff we've done. So, yeah, I wouldn't say, you know, we're in great shape, but we're not bleeding too much. Yeah.
I mean, there's obviously a disadvantage to that, as you've said, Heath, because actually your insurer is using it as an excuse to wriggle out of paying you. So sometimes...
Yeah, exactly. But, you know, what do you do? My argument with them was... If I'd sacked all my staff, you'd be paying me out right now. Mm. Do you know what I mean? So how's that fair? Mm. So you would have to pay me money, but, you know, I've managed to retain, well, across all the pubs, we've managed to retain everybody. No one's been laid off, and that hasn't been easy, but, you know, what the future look like? If we're fighting like this all this year as well, with no more government support, which Rishi says he's not going to give us, where are we going to be, you know?
I mean, you have business interruption insurance. Your business has been interrupted. You surely can't. They can't make the case that you have earned the same amount that you would have earned. I know you've done well and you've scored some wins, but this isn't a normal year for you, surely.
Oh God, no! It's horrendous. It's hugely down. Do you know what I mean? But then hopefully my lawyer gets to resolve it. I think they're just being cheeky. Just say no. And just see how far you push back and then go, okay, we'll pay them to get rid of them.
I felt that from the get-go with the government grants too. I felt that, you know, the longer it goes on, the less numbers they'll have to worry about. And it's exactly the same as you. That's a war of attrition, isn't it? And if you can hang on, you've got a chance. But how many people are How many people are going to hang on? How many people have just thrown the towel in already? We've not really seen that come to market. But I'll tell you the big move, when you see the likes of Rooney coming back into the market this week, you know that people are screwed and you know they've seen an opportunity. So,
well, we're gonna touch on that in a later session, those re-emergence of people coming in. And it is quite fascinating. And it's either can be one of the two things, really. But, I mean, the challenge, I guess, at the moment has been around sort of with what money you have, you know, what calls do you make? You know, you've got suppliers to pay, you've got landlords to pay. I mean, how do you process that? How do you prioritise who you pay and who you don't pay?
I think
first, going to see you the most.
Well, no, I think you look after. We've always looked after our suppliers really well, and we moved when the pandemic came in. We moved and we used the first grant to pay all the suppliers. We then moved to settling them on a weekly basis. Mm-hmm. So just keeping the wheels turning, really, and that is, I think, I mean, I have to ask them, but I think that's done us a lot of good. Mm-hmm. Because when you need something from a supplier, that they'll go, yeah, you can have it. We're not bringing out big debts. We're not smoking them out. We're behaving properly. So they're getting paid, and I know a lot of people, a lot of pubs have just thought, well, I'll just, you know, I'm closed, I'm not paying, and then if they go out of business, they go out of business. But we've tried to play it right, you know?
I mean, unfairly, but there's always been that sort of rocky relationship with some operators and suppliers, and suppliers that are quite wary of getting into the food service side because of poor payment and things like that. But I think you're right. I mean, it's a valid point. If you look after those guys, you're going to be... But do you look after them at the detriment of others?
No, because you've done your negotiation. You've gone and talked to, you know, your landlord where you've needed to, or those, you know, different... But you've also kind of made... You've done good housekeeping. So you've gone through the stuff that you don't need anymore. And there's things like subscriptions that you have for, I don't know, reservation systems that you can pause... You can go through that. You can look at, you know, your other different subscriptions, you know, a bunch of stuff, and you save your money there. Mm. Do you know what I mean? You can then do some accurate reads on your power meters, and actually, rather than running on estimates and just getting on with it and see whether they've been running ahead, you know, so you can do some smart stuff like that to be.
It's good housekeeping. It's good housekeeping right now. You can look at. You've got time to look at who you're buying off, what you're doing, your pricing, you know, and what you need and what you don't need. I think it's a good time to sort of. Reset as such, you know, not ideal, but you can reset the business a bit.
So a sensible time to be sort of shopping around and looking at utility suppliers, things like that.
No, I don't think you want to be doing that.
It's more no real right. Well, how much cash are you burning now, and should you be burning it? Can you do anything about
the outgoings? Where is it going? Being really forensic about your
Go through every line on your bank statement.
I mean, you two are fairly lucky in a sense. You've got fairly compliant landlords. That's probably James's landlord on the phone now asking for some money. But what about the guys that aren't? I mean, if you're a Wellington tenant, I mean, we've seen stuff at the moment with those guys have been really sort of struggling to reach terms of agreement with their landlords. Your commercial relation.
It's really unfair, isn't it? You know, I mean, like we've talked about the past, Green King's my landlord at the Red Lion and Sun, and they've been amazing. Do you know what I mean? 90% rent reduction, you know, for all of lockdown. That's how it should be. So you all come out of it intact and you know, say intact, but in some sort of good shape going forward. But and then you appreciate the relationship, you know?
You've also got some private landlords, haven't you, with the outside. So, I mean, how is that panning out and what's the situation with that?
We've paid where we can. We've deferred where we can. I mean, it's a real mixed bag here. I think Green King's the very best example. And probably our site in Horsham's the very worst example.
And the windlocks are right. Like we've agreed a rent reduction there, but you know it's now coming up to a year that it's been closed. Even at reduced rent, how long is it sustainable?
And our fourth site's another private landlord, and we've just kept paying, but we've been generating cash through where we can here. So it felt again. I think there's a great stigma about landlords that they just have all the money, and I don't think they just have a different business to us, and their business is based on generating income through four walls. Yeah. Maybe lots of four walls in some cases, but nevertheless, it still needs to work. Mm. So, I don't, for those that are able to, and have been able to make concessions, great. But I guess some of them are limited as to what they can do.
Yeah.
One thing I would say is that deferral doesn't solve the problem. And that's the argument we're having with Horsham. You know, great. They think that they're doing us a massive favour. They're absolutely not. They're just delaying it.
It's a
conversation about medium long term and you know, changing of the high street and changing of the trade, particularly on that. It's a small site. So I think if you look back, Heath said this a while ago. He said, you know, if you're going to go for a job with someone, ask how they dealt with their suppliers and their staff during the pandemic, because it'll show a lot about that business and the way it's operated. And I think that's the same for our landlords too.
I mean, that brings us on to the issue of furlough costs as well. I mean, we've seen Alex Riley of Loungers this week put out on social media costs of, what was it, about $100,000 a week that furloughs cost him, and infuriated that the government keeps talking about it as support when it's costing him that amount of money. Now, he's obviously an extreme case. He's in... there's 150 odd sites, if not more. So they've got that those higher costs. But I mean, it's still a cost to businesses. So I mean, if you're talking about looking at your costs, is there anything you can do on furlough other than, does it mean you have to let people go? In which case, that defeats the purpose of what government set up to do in the first place.
Well, what I found out recently, because I had a couple of staff ask me, because obviously furlough money is only 80%. They can actually pause the staff. You can't do anything with it. But if the staff want to pause their pension contributions, they can do that until the 1st of May. So if the staff ring their pension provider and give them their details, they can pause their contributions, which affect, the knock-on effect is that your pensions that you pay to, you know, to balance out their pensions, your contribution isn't paid either. It's only for a couple of months, but if staff want to break and save some money or have a bit more pocket money while they're on furlough, they can actually pause their pensions, which I only found out recently. And, you know, I gave the option to some of my staff and I said, you know, you can do this because they're complaining about money. And some of them have taken it up.
Okay.
So that helps the company. It's only for a couple of months, but it just means that, you know, you've got options, you know. They've got options.
Yeah, no, that's useful to know.
So. I think just on that point with Alex and what have you, there is a great myth, really, that this furlough just it takes a cost away from the employer entirely, and that there's no pension contributions or anything else.
National insurance.
Yeah, I think runs at sort of, I think it's still a 17 or 18% cost to the employer. So I think that's one of the great bits of poor communication here, is that you're all right, or your staff are paid for. Well, no, they're not. And actually, if you did look at it, the best thing you'd do is lay everyone off.
Mm.
Particularly
well,
in our
what
industry.
Gordon Ramsay done. Gordon Ramsay, 500 employees, whatever, laid them off. So many businesses have, because they can't afford furlough. Mm. You know, as Alex is saying, how long can you not generate any cash and still pay people furlough? Mm.
And of course, the other big sort of well, it's not really a big headline. It's been ticking on for quite a while, hasn't it? Is the scandal of the lack of grant payouts by the councils? And I mean, I think you're experiencing this firsthand, aren't you, Keith?
Oh man, honestly, Haringey Council, Haringey, can you hear me? Open the grants up. Let us apply. This is ridiculous. I can't even apply for the latest round of funding. Can't even apply for it. It says they're still waiting for guidance from the council. Are you serious?
From the government?
Are you serious? Seriously, what are they trying to do? My business rates are huge here at the Red Lion. This is the first time I've been able to apply for a grant, and I can't even do it. They won't even let you apply. It's disgusting.
I mean, we know. I mean, there are over half of November's grants still haven't been paid, was the last statistic we saw, which, I mean, it is criminal, isn't it? I mean, and some are still hanging on from grants from further back than that, I think. But it is, I mean, it's incompetence on a level. And I think, as somebody was saying, you know, that's probably Heath, actually, because it's kind of conspiracy theory bandy amount, but they're hoping that these businesses go under so that they can keep the money themselves.
I understand that to be different. I understand it needs to go back, it gets repaid, but surely they've made an assumption on the amount that's given to a council based on the businesses in the area. So any money that goes back is either a failure of organisation or communication, because they've told them what the number should be.
Does it really go back, though? Call me a conspiracy theory, but they're like, you know, who's going to miss a few hundred grand?
No, I think we're talking millions and millions, but...
I think they're using to dig up the roads around me at the moment. It's roadworks everywhere, but that's where your grants are going here.
Well, the thing is, though, like I've said before, you know, redeploy your team, your staff there. I mean, the top and bottom is, if you're working for the council right now, and I'm making a great sweeping statement, you're going to keep your job. You've got a lovely pension ticking in the background, and you've probably got less work to do than you've ever had, and working from home at lower costs. So, you know, really, guys, you're letting us, you know, I think a broad sweeping statement is we're all being let down as an industry, although our example locally has been in Hayward Teeth anyway.
Well, I was going to say, after you've maligned the entire council employees, we are going to be speaking to a council employee in the next session, aren't we, who is going to be covering off some of these grant issues. So,
and it's been brilliant for us. I mean, that's...
Yeah, well, let's hopefully he can share some insight that's going to help all three of our listeners on this one. So let's leave it there and pick it up again with Kevin in the next session. And welcome back to the Lock In podcast. With us today, we've got a special guest, Kevin Stewart from Mid Sussex Council. Hi, Kevin.
Hello there.
So, Kevin, do you want to just give yourself a little bit of an introduction? Explain to our listeners sort of why we're talking to you.
Hello, my name is Kevin Stewart. I'm the business unit leader for revenues and benefits of Mid Sussex District Council. I've been in the business of revenues and benefits. This is my 39th year in my career. But I'm personally here today because most publicans and people with offering that sort of business would want to know about the business grants that are currently here, because we are facing a pandemic of which we probably never see in our lifetime again. Mm. And it's a very challenging time for businesses. And therefore, I'm here to hopefully offer help and guidance to your business, wherever authority, wherever you live.
Thanks, Kevin. James here. We spoke, I think, 10 days ago on a Sunday night, which was... I was surprised that the council were working on a Sunday night, but I soon realised that you're working most Saturday nights and Sunday nights and what have you to get this off the ground. My experience has been quite poor. We have four pubs and we deal with a neighbouring council where it's been radio silence. So to get advice on a Sunday night as to exactly the breadth of grants available was brilliant, but as brilliant was the fact that within a week we've got grants processed, approved, and in some cases paid already, which is astonishing, and I think most of our listeners will find astonishing too. So in terms of best in class, you guys have blown me away personally, and to say, you know, much appreciated, because I know looking at the hours the emails are coming through as well and the communication, this is no 9-to-5 operation. So whereas we are, you know, there's been a lot of thought about the government's actions has been to smoke pubs out and to lose them. Certainly our experience locally has been far from it, and you know, thank you from us and everything you're doing. So my thing really would be really helpful, I think, if you could cover... there were three distinct periods of grant applications that we were talking about, with some deadlines and what they meant. And then if you're happy just to talk through the, you know, brief as you can, but the different types of grants and why they should be applied, and maybe an indicative figure of the sort of money that people should expect.
I'm more than happy to do that, and thank you for your kind comments. My attitude is that you need to go the extra mile to help local businesses at such a challenging time. And yes, it hasn't been a 9-to-5 job. As I said, and as you know, my council held a webinar at 1 o'clock today, which is on YouTube, and I'm sure we can give links if anyone's interested in that. Mm. We need to get the message out there because people need to apply for this help. Can I also state that the periods I'm going to state in respect of the help are in respect of Mid-Sussex. Some authorities, including where I live, have got slightly different dates, but the principles will apply the same as well. The main grants from November that affect pubs and that type of property are from the 5th of November to the 1st of December, which was the second national lockdown. And basically, any business paying business rates that was mandated to close could claim a grant. Now, you might find out that's 27 days, but it is actually... the grant was paid for 28 days and basically was £3,000 for that 28 days. Slightly lesser amounts if you had a smaller rateable value. That was for a rateable value of £51,000 or over. from the 2nd of December to the 25th of December, Mid Sussex was in Tier 2. Now, small number of properties were mandated to close during that particular time. As a result of that, generally a wet pub, and most of you will know what a wet pub, that's basically where you don't offer a major meal, would be closed based on the guidance that was there. You could claim a grant, a closed grant, and they did it in two specific periods for us, three specific periods, the 2nd of December to the 15th of December, the 16th of December to the 18th of December, and the 19th to the 25th. Once again, that was £3,000 for 14 days or part thereof, so you might have had a smaller period. So for 14 days, you get £3,000 if your RV was over 51. There are smaller amounts of 1334 for up to a 15,000 RV, or £2,000 for the 14 days for the 15 to 51 rateable values. So, very small amounts. Can I stress again, people have to apply them multiple times, as you myself mentioned, James, you've got specific grants. From the 26th of December, and this is where the periods will slightly differ, Mid Sussex went to Tier 4. And that became a closed addendum, like a national scheme lockdown. And therefore, the claim again was based on the 1334, the up to 15 RV, the 2,000, and the 3,000 for the 28 days or part thereof in respect of that period. That took us up to the 5th of November when we went into the third national lockdown, which... we've now got a grant.
You said 5th of November. You mean 5th of January?
Sorry, 5th of January. Yes, 5th of January, my fault. No. Well spotted. The 5th of January, we went to the new national lockdown. That is to the 15th of February. And we are paying for a 6-week grant period of up to £4,500 per further business support closed lockdown payment of £4,500. Okay, 9,000. So you could, if you had a 51,000 RV for that 6-week period, get £13,500. Now, on top of that, there is a wet lead pub grant of £1,000 from the 2nd to the 29th of December that is open to the 31st of December. So you could get that £1,000, and a pub could still apply for a discretionary grant, the additional restrictions grant, over and above that. So there are a lot of grants. I think I said in today's webinar, James, that you could apply, a pub could apply possibly for 10 grants.
10 grants, yeah, yeah.
Possibly more in respect of that. So there is a lot of grants there to apply for, multiple grants. Now, systems don't make it easy. Some authorities are not even insisting you apply again, they're just awarding it. If you put your property reference into our system, grant approval, it's a third-party system, but... we've used it all the way through, it will bring up all the grants that you can apply for. And James, I think you did go into that system and use that system in respect of there. So in respect of a national lockdown or Tier 4 lockdown, it will be a closed addendum grant, which basically virtually all non-essential businesses are shut down during that period. And you'll get a closed grant. There'll be no open discretionary grants. In a Tier 2 or Tier 3, it's a restricted number of businesses that are closed, generally the pubs that are wet pubs, and there'll be a closed grant for that period, and there'll also be an open discretionary grant, but the additional restrictions grant could be open all the way through, although we have specific funding windows. I'm sorry that sounds complicated, but it is.
Well, we will post on the homepage for the podcast. We'll post links to your YouTube webinar because I think people will benefit from seeing.
Yes,
that.
I will be sending that out tonight. By the way,
brilliant. Okay, we'll make sure we've got that. So you talked about the sort of monies for wet lead, and I guess where does the cutoff for wet lead sit? Because I mean, you can be 49% food and 51% wet. Where is that? What are the right. Is there a cutoff on that?
That is a very, very good question. And there is no case law on wet pubs for closed pubs. Now, the wet lead pub is quite specific. In the guidance, it says if your takings, doesn't show you when you take your takings, but if your takings show that your drinks is 50.1%,
more than your food takings, you can qualify for the £1,000. Right. Even if you changed it now, so you've got more food, if you can show that an element of time before, you can get that 1,000 grant. There is no such guidance for a pub being closed in certainly tier two. In tier four or national lockdown, the pub will be shut anyway.
Yeah.
But in tier two or tier three, there is no lockdown. So we've had much debate in the office over what is deemed a substantial meal. Yes, I believe there is Scottish case law, but there is much debate over that. Now, we've taken the attitude that if a business can show to us they're more or less mainly drink operated, we will give them the benefit of the doubt. That's my authority, that's the understanding, because we're there to help businesses. But what you've got to remember, there's over 320 authorities with probably very different experiences from your users. And trust me, I've never done grants before this year, and I've suddenly become what people deem to be an expert. It's been learning on the spot in doing it. And I believe in helping businesses. And I'm also an advisor to the government department, BIS, on this as well. I'm part of their working party. So I do have some connections. My attitude is we want to try and help businesses through this most challenging time to be there to make sure you're serving drinks again and helping your customers again after this is finished, because I think there'll be a new normal and we want to get as many businesses through this as possible.
Which is fantastic. I mean, I think that's to be applauded. I mean, one of the issues we have been discussing is the fact that lots of grants still haven't been paid out. Councils are not really enabling operators to claim these things. I mean, I suppose one thing is, why are you guys so different? Is it just that you love pubs more than the others and are looking forward to getting back to it? What is tying their hands? Why is there a delay? Can you clarify any of this for us?
What I would say to that is, in West Sussex, I've actually led on pulling all the discretionary guidelines together. And most of us have gone to the system, the grant approval system. I actually was one of the leading authorities with it in the first place, and now we've got 24 authorities on it. And it's taken us time to build that up and work it. But we decided early on, and the political feedback on us and the support from me at Mid-Sussex has been incredible, as you saw from the leader today. We decided we were going to do this and get payments out, and we've generally got payments out within 72 hours of a grant application being made.
Wow.
48 hours to get into the bank account. I'm sure James will confirm that it was sort of like that speed.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Heath's got his head in his hands.
Heath is despairing here because he can't even claim his grant from Haringey Council.
I can't even apply. Haringey won't even let me apply. They're waiting for guidance from the government on the latest round of funding.
The guidance is all there. I can give you the link for that.
That's Haringey Council saying to me, on their website, we're waiting for up-to-date guidance from the government before we release the next round of funding.
Yes. I can assure you all the guidance was received last Wednesday because I got it.
Why do you think some of these councils are dragging?
I can't really comment on another authority in dealing with it, but all I'll say to you is we paid out our first from the 5th of January lockdown payments. We actually processed them on Sunday and started paying them on Monday. I would say that because of the complexity, and this is why we've absolutely gone out and tried to sell this. We've emailed businesses, told them to apply. We've still only got about 40% of people that can apply for these grants. And that's with all the efforts we're making. I think others are struggling. Now, I've probably got a work ethic that might surprise you, as has surprised James. I've been working all hours of day and night, and my landlady in Mid-Sussex said, unless I had a real name on the bottom of my bill, I wouldn't have guessed where you worked, because the hour you go out and the hour you come back is just incredible. I'm probably not your typical type of local government worker, but let's just say I want to help, and I want to help local businesses get out. In respect of your own authority, I can only suggest you contact them and actually ask them what's happening and give them examples of where it's being done elsewhere. And if they're struggling for a system, I know exactly where they can get a system.
Kevin, yes, one of the...
Yeah. It can be up and running within 24 hours, that a system, a third-party system.
Kevin, okay. One of the criticisms has been all the kind of conspiracy theories is that councils don't want to give the money out because they can what they don't give out, they can keep.
Absolutely not. Our first set of grants, as I said at the webinar today, James, we paid out $26,355,000. That was 2,605 grants. I know all the figures inside out. We had to give back $2,925,000 to the government because we hadn't spent it all.
Right.
All the money we don't spend has to go back to the government. Now, what I would say to that is, I do not want to give it back to the government. I'm sorry about that. I do not want to give it back to the government. I want to give it to local businesses in my community, my community I work, because Sussex has been great to me. Okay, I live away. I came down to Sussex on the back of a huge personal tragedy 5 years ago, but Sussex has been great to me, both Wealden and Mid-Sussex. I want to help the community back. I want to give them the support in this, the most challenging time in 100 years, in my view. It's very, very important to do that. And I will always go the extra mile to do that.
So in terms of sort of key takeaways for operators that are having difficulties with claiming, what would your advice be, Kevin?
Contact their council, contact their elected member. It's very, very important. Now, can I say, not all authorities are doing it the same way. I'm normally a business rates man. And not exactly the most popular with business associations. Can I say this year you've got a payment rates holiday. We don't yet know whether that extends to next year. And that's one to watch out for the budget on the 3rd of March. That's a problem for me because I normally bill before then for next year. So that's another issue I've got to look at in terms of that. But my view is contact your authority, wherever you are, find out who's doing it. I've done it as a revenues and benefits because I said I just want to do this because it's given us so much extra information about local businesses, and I'm not there to collect it. I will go the extra mile to give them as much help as I possibly can. And we've had referrals to us where, not just pubs, but other referrals where people have said, I just didn't know you could help us. And it's getting round the mirth of the rules. Yes, I collect money. I collect huge amounts of money. But I tell you what, I've had so much pleasure in helping local businesses during this time, not for the first circumstances they're in, but giving them some help to help them at the most troublesome time when they're just trying to carry out their livelihood and they're caught by this vicious virus.
So will there be people like you in other councils, or are you a bit of a one-off, do you think?
Well, my boss did say a few weeks ago there's unique and then there's you, Kevin. I don't think I've ever met anyone like you before and I probably never will again. I'm well known in my sector because my professional institute, I was its national president in 2014-15, and I've probably got a work ethic and an enthusiasm. I turned 60, I had a lockdown birthday this year, and I could probably give some of those youngsters a run for the money on enthusiasm. Luckily, I don't need much sleep, and as James will know, I do send him emails at all times of day and night.
Absolutely.
Weekends and bank holidays too.
Fantastic. Okay, Ken, well, I think we're out of time for that, but thank you very much for your insight there. We will, yes, we'll be in touch with the YouTube. We'll make sure that that's on our homepage with this with the podcast.
I will be sending that out later on today, along with the slides from today, and you're welcome to send on your slides to your readership as well. I'll give the links to there. I'm more than happy to deal with any future queries.
Brilliant.
And good luck, wherever you may be, in trying to get access to the grants.
Cheers,
thank you
Kevin.
Very
thank
much.
You so much.
Brilliant. Cheers, mate.
Cheers.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Cheers.
So thank that's you. It for this session. Don't forget to subscribe to the podcast using the links on the homepage and leave us your thoughts. And we are now going to move on. We're going to be talking about confidence in the marketplace. You're listening to the Lock In podcast with myself, Ed Beddington, Heath Ball, and James Cuthbertson. So we're focusing on a bit of a financial theme for this episode of the podcast. We've talked about grants, we've talked about the various challenges and difficulties of keeping businesses going. But let's maybe look at sort of a bit of forward thinking. Maybe there's a degree of confidence starting to emerge in the sector. We've seen quite a few announcements from existing pub companies that they're expanding. We've seen, I think, Red Oak Taverns has acquired some new sites. The Inn Collection Group has been quite acquisitive during this pandemic generally, and it's opened two or three new sites as well, which with significant investment, which is really positive. And obviously the biggie, or a couple of biggies actually, we've seen Jerry Carroll of Hawthorne, ex-Hawthorne, with James Croft from EI, and Mark McGinty as well, his colleague at Hawthorne, going to be launching a new pub co. And the return of the infamous Rooney and Ant, formerly of Green King. Sorry, what was that, Heath?
He was breaking up.
Returning to the sector with a big pot of cash. I think, what was it, 200 million?
200 million, yeah.
200 million to...
Was it Donald Trump? Did he give him the money?
Moving on. So, I mean, to me, there's two schools of thought on this, isn't there? There's certainly on some of it, the with the big investment, so the Rooney kind of thing, that sort of there's a investors circling the industry, and you can inject a different word for the investor if you like into that. But I mean, to me, is that not a positive thing that we think that people? I mean, yes, you can argue, you know, there's sort of people circling above and looking to pick the bones of those who fall by the wayside. But to me, that also shows a degree of confidence that we're going to come out the other side of this.
I don't agree. I think it's two things. I think you only get positive press releases. You don't get press releases saying we're in the shit. So you're going to see those. And I think you also...
You haven't seen my press releases.
I can imagine what they'd be like. But you don't get businesses... If businesses are talking things up, it's because they have to for shareholders and for families right now, because there's just no good news for them, really. Those that are coming in... I mean, let's be perfectly honest about that. Private equity groups can't put their money anywhere at the moment. They're not making any money. So they need to tie into deals that are going to show them a decent return over what it does it's sat in the bank, which is nothing. So I think that there's good reason to talk it up. And I think there probably will be discounts. It'll be from the big guys where they can play a medium long-term play and do it with some security, like with Rooney. Because if you're a small guy looking to invest now, you're not likely to have the financial clout to see out another storm.
Mm.
And that's where it'll be the big guys that go in, and they'll be getting distressed assets, and they're just like vultures, you know, flying over the industry. I don't say it's not right to look for an opportunity though, Ed. I don't think that's not what I'm saying. But I'm just saying, at the minute you hear that sort of news, and you think, for better handling of the situation, and we've talked about grants, for getting grants out to allow people to keep their keep their businesses alive, they wouldn't be prey for this sort of opportunism. And ultimately what we're talking about is $200 million coming over here to buy our crown jewels again. And this is where we use the pub as a bloody great, you know, poster boy for the UK, yet we're going to let it slip out of our hands again. That's how I feel about it. I'm not bitter about the business opportunity. I'm bitter at how they've arrived as wounded animals to be preyed on, because it shouldn't have happened.
I mean, strong words, and I don't disagree with the sentiment. I think I did avoid using the word vulture or shark circling, but I mean,
I know it's
because I am always a diplomatic one. But again, I still stand by that element that yes, if you look in that macro kind of thing, but you look at the bigger picture, it does show that there's confidence that this is an industry.
It's not going to go away.
That isn't going to go away. No, and for me, I take that as a positive.
Think about it. A chain of American-themed sports bars all across the country with Rooney leading the charge. It's going to be amazing.
Well, you think, yeah. take those...
It's the idea of heaven, isn't it?
Take those wonderful free houses, you know, with community ties that are bespoke.
They're not going to be going after them, though.
I think they are.
Yeah, they will. But I mean, those are more challenging. I mean, they're going to want to be buying up the chains.
No, they said no chains. No? So they don't lie.
They really like chimney pot local pubs.
Community
pubs. Central London. Mm. Community pubs, turning them around, making them fancy.
Leafy Surrey. Absolutely. Big time. That's exactly. They go for demographics. They've probably got the pubs on a spreadsheet right now. They've run the numbers.
He's got a good track record with Green King.
Well, I mean, you know, this pub, oh Christ, this industry relies on diversity, right?
I just like stunning you into silence.
Yeah,
with that one.
I just thought, you know,
for words, that was.
This industry is about diversity, and I think what we don't want is cookie cutter pubs, and we don't need any more of that. You know, we've got to fight for that individual. But at the moment, that individual is getting blasted.
I was chatting to Pete Brown earlier, actually, because he's writing a piece for The Guardian, probably out by the time this podcast goes out. But and we were talking about, and there was a degree, he was saying, you know, there is that element of, does government want that to get rid of all those sort of independent, small, sort of family-run operations?
Feels that way, right?
And just have big conglomerates of businesses that's easier to deal with, it's easier to sort of approach. But then the irony of that is those are the ones that avoid paying their tax. So
yeah, that are smarter. Yeah, true.
I mean, what do you think, Heath? I mean, does it signal a degree of confidence? I mean,
I think so. I think it signals a degree of opportunity. As like, we all know there's going to be, we're in chaos, there's opportunity. And I think they've realised that there's going to be a lot of great pubs. They're going to go to the wayside, they can pick them up, and they can do well. I think, you know, any smart operator or person is thinking, let's get in there now while it's all falling apart, pick up some sites, sit on them, and get them back open when we're allowed open. I think it's a smart move, and I think it does show that we all know that people are dying to get back to the pub. The public are dying, and I think there's just going to be this huge uplift when we are able to do it properly and get back open. I think they know that, we know that. Yeah, I think they're smart.
But for every big investor that's going to come in and bring in a chain pub or whatever, turn them into chain pubs, there's going to be guys like, you know, Jerry Carroll and his guys and Relev Champs, all these things. So actually, their heartland is community, suburban. That's what they're looking to do. Mm. So I'm not that pessimistic that I think we're going to see swathes of pubs turned into, you know, cookie cutter managed kind of operations. I think we've still got a lot of good operators out there who are going to, those that can survive, and again this comes down to survival, all those that have stepped away, we may see a resurgence coming back. I mean, yes, Rooney's coming back, but there's going to be other operators that are sort of looking at it from a different lens that are going to see the opportunity. And if they've cashed in their chips previously, you know, this industry is a comeback industry, isn't it? You know, no one ever really leaves it. You know, it's littered with people that sort of step away and then go, yeah, let's give it one more shot. So I don't know.
It's like bank robbers, there's always one more deal. One more big job, guys, come on. I'm not negative about it. I think
not a metaphor I'm going to use, but yeah, go on.
No, I completely understand the premise behind it. I just fear for the trade a little, and I can't help but feel for those that that may be losing their assets to no fault of their own. That's all. I mean, that's all. Maybe I'm just feeling emotional this afternoon, but I don't blame the big guys.
Something you want to talk about, James?
No, not really. Just another Jaipur will do me fine. Yeah, well, so. Yeah, same.
Did your wife listen to the last podcast?
I was really in trouble. Yeah, I did. I got absolutely beasted for it, yeah. The problem is, you come and have a couple of beers through the podcast, and then your mouth runs away with you, and then that's it. It's all done. So here we go again.
So anything you want to share about? No.
Let's
dig in
the hole. The spare room's fine.
Yeah,
it's fine.
That's fine. That's win-win. Peace life anyway, isn't it? So, right. Let's maybe bring this one to a close now. And
what do you think?
Yeah, let's do that before we get ourselves into any more trouble. Welcome back to the Lock In Podcast with Heath Ball and James Cuthbertson. And myself, Ed Bennington. I was distracted by somebody pulling faces at me there. This session, we're going to be talking about opportunities to boost revenue, ways that operators can sort of look to convert some stock into cash. I mean, we've had our hands tied behind our backs by the government with the deal on not being able to do takeaway booze, which has been a real blow to a lot of businesses because delivery isn't always an option. But there are other things you can do, I guess, and you guys have been doing some of it. I understand, Heath, you are opening
life's pretty crap up in Highgate.
It's pretty crap, isn't it? I mean, Yeah, that's terrible. It's terrible. So, Heath, you are basically converting. So, look, to give people the background to this, you spent a fortune on a shack to sell takeaway booze to the people of Highgate. We then got shut down by the government because of you and your behaviour. So I'm continuing to push this. Heath is responsible for our current woes. But you've got this great big shack sitting up there that you spent a fortune on that you can't do jack shit with. But you've come up with a new thing, have you? So tell us all about that.
Well, the shack was sitting there redundant, and I was just like, well, it was furloughed. We had to furlough the shack. And then I was like, you know, why don't we... Well, yeah.
Have you furloughed Boris? Because Boris was in the shack, wasn't he? Yeah.
Oh, yeah. So we're turning the shack from tomorrow, we're turning it into a creperia.
A what,
so
we're
going to do crepes out... A creperia?
Right,
creperia?
Okay.
Creperia?
Yeah.
Creperia?
I don't know.
We're going to start doing crepes out of the shed.
Crepes.
And it's the you know, the response so far from the local public punters is they love the idea. There's a very famous one in Hampstead, which has been there 40 years.
Until you close it. And you're trying to put it out of the business, is that what you're saying?
No, well, you haven't heard the story. There's a pub next door, the William IV pub, and during lockdown, they've literally 2 metres away from this one that's been there for 40 years, they've opened a crepe stand next to it.
Is that a spice store?
There's a big war going on.
So there's crepe wars in North London, is that what you're saying?
Yeah, so when we can open a crepe stand up, it just means that I can still keep people employed. It gives us, you know, it gives us something else to do. It's user-friendly. Kids will love it. We open that from tomorrow.
So customers are going to be basically coming to the pub and queuing up outside to get crepes to eat on the street.
I'm hoping to put all the other businesses out of business, get the government to put us in a full lockdown, hopefully by my selfish actions of selling food on the street.
Once again.
You could see where I was going with that.
Yeah, once again.
So, encouraging crowds to gather and eat crepes on the streets of Highgate, thereby basically you'll end up now, pubs will not be able to do takeaway food. It will have to be delivery only because of you.
Yeah.
Because they will ban collection for takeaway food.
It's terribly middle class to me doing crepes, but yeah, I just I need to make money, man. Like, this is ridiculous. Grants aren't going to pay for shit, so yeah.
we're just blowing all that session out the water earlier when we talked about grants and how people could benefit from all the rest of it. And well,
in a Jerry Maguire style, show me the money, he says. Show me the money.
So these, how's it going on the crepe making front? My experience with crepes was a trip to Paris with my good lady. We decided we'd stop at a roadside creperie store, if that's the right word for it, and have a crepe. But unfortunately, we seemed to get the work experience guy with his first day on the job.
He wasn't work experience. He was French, you were English. That was it. He didn't want to serve you.
But entirely possible. However, he basically had about 8 attempts at making a crepe, in which each attempt ended up with him swearing more loudly. I learnt new vocabulary in French. I thought my swear words in French was quite good, but he taught me some new ones, and it just became such a stressful experience. Then you just regretted asking. You've gone, we would have walked away 20 minutes ago, but he's now on his 8th attempt at this. And we feel we've got to see it through with him. We've got to see it through with him.
So it was crap at crepes.
It was crap at crepes, yeah. That's just ruin every joke, don't you?
Was you going to do that?
I was going to do that joke. Thank you. Brilliant.
Actually, it wasn't. You were going on for a while about that fucking story.
It was a really shit joke. So anyway, so Heath, how are you getting on making crepes is my question.
Well, me personally, I have the patience. I don't really have much patience, to be honest, so I can't really make
really?
Them.
Really?
My guys have been practicing. Oh, man. Apparently, you've got to be, like, really relaxed and, you know, no. So about some of my staff, a lot of the guys have been making them, practicing. Chefs are really good.
Yeah.
They're really good, man. So far, like, the stuff, yeah. We've been doing, yesterday and today, we're just doing dry runs and giving them out for free. And not officially open, and then tomorrow we launch. But, I think we're going to do all right. They're tasty.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So for those that don't have a redundant shack outside their business that caused all the industry to shut down, what else can they do? I mean, James, what are you guys?
We're looking at, obviously we've got a delivery and takeaway model now, and it's again, you can't just stick with the same things. You're constantly looking. We introduced bao buns last week, which just went nuts. We introduced a brunch.
Yeah.
Bao buns. To assist, you know, go alongside a menu, brilliant. I mean, just we sold out real quick.
So we're going to go a bit harder on that this week. We're going to look at one of the things that we've got, one of the issues we've got as a pub is everyone's got stock that's really dead money. So we're looking at some of our special beers that we've got. We've got some really limited edition stuff.
That you can't normally sell.
Well, there's that. But it's nice to have around. And but they are, you know, some of it's quite stretching in terms of styles. There's some brilliant stuff from Burning Sky and the like. So what we're going to do is we're going to bag it up, put them in sort of little collections that people can buy, delivered, obviously. And it'll be for the enthusiasts coming out the back of Dry January. If anyone's, you know, got stuck into that and gone the whole hog and gone for the double, the vegan and the Dry January, they'll come out the other end and want to, you know, want something special, I hope. So we're going to try and do that. So, but effectively, you know, from talking on a trade podcast, you're effectively trying to turn dead money into cash.
I think that's the thing, like try and move, even if you're just making 10, 15%, just move it, because you don't know how long you're going to be like this for.
Or wine that's not going to get any better.
Wine. I think another thing, another initiative we're doing across the pubs is we're, and I think some operators are already doing this, we're choosing key dates that are coming up. We've got Valentine's Day coming up, and we've got Chinese New Year, which at the Lockhart and at the Red Lion, we're doing a Chinese-themed menu, you know, using the best quality ingredients and just trying to do something a bit special. So, you know, we'll be delivering and doing takeaways and just trying to pick key dates and just make it a bit of fun we can talk about and do some interesting food.
And I've seen, I mean, there's a bit of a boom in sort of home cocktails, isn't there? And I've seen some pubs take advantage of that. I think sort of one case in point, the Yummy Guys, Yummy Pubs, have built a business and launched it amazingly quickly. I mean, hats off to them. They turned this around really quickly and they've set it up, and it seems to be getting some really good traction. But cocktails in boxes that they send to people's homes, so it's a kind of cocktail kit that you make yourself. I mean, that's something that's
it's interesting though, because you kind of look at what has been the death of local media, traditional media. It's gone, all but gone. But for years and years, we've talked about how there's real money in social media, and boy, do we know it now. Anyone invested hard in social media, and it's not too late, you know, but the amount of stuff we sell out, if we put a post out, the phone just rings and rings and rings and rings.
So the foul buns, yeah.
Yeah, it was nuts. I mean, just properly nuts. So I think for those that haven't done social still, and there'll still be a few, but or get someone to look at your social and do it properly. I'm really struggling at the minute looking at people reminiscing about years gone by. I don't care. What are you doing now?
God,
do you
know what I mean? It's like, seriously.
You know, it's
operators out there, seriously, stop posting shit posts saying we miss you. Like, it's depressing. It's like putting photos of your ex-girlfriend who's left you. We miss you. Oh, we can't wait to be back with you. We love you. Stop that shit.
Is that from a friend?
Put up positive stuff. Yeah, but I mean, like, stop doing that. Oh, we can't wait to be back. Open stuff. It's no one wants to see that. No one. Just do something else. It's shit.
But do you feel passionate about it?
That'll form the clip for the promo of this. I think that's
it's just shit.
Yeah, it's just.
If that could be a new name for the podcast.
I mean, it's a fair point. Focus on the now. Focus on the what you're doing. I mean, obviously, if you're not doing anything, that's a bit difficult.
There's a thing in horse racing. You can get done for non-trying. And I think that's what the industry shouldn't be. You know, despite all the things that we clearly feel aggrieved about, we should not be done for non-trying. And I think if I look back on the last year, we've tried our heart out, you know, and if we end up it not working, it doesn't work. But you don't want to be in that situation.
Mm-hmm.
So stop reminiscing the past. You know, get on and do something. If you
I mean, a practical question, because these are rare. But your investment in social media. So you've been doing this, and the bow buns. Yeah, I mean, they look amazing, and people have jumped all over that. I mean, how much are you investing into sort of promoting this?
It's time, though, isn't it? It's time and conversations around good quality images.
So you're not paying.
No.
You're not doing paid sponsored posts yet.
A little bit. On Facebook.
I did a couple a week on Instagram. I've never done it before, and they worked out really well. Do you know what I mean? For a couple of quid, you can really get a boost.
Yeah.
I think, you know, I think with exploring, people are sitting at home bored. They're just looking at social media feeds all day. You know, so.
Well, I don't think you want to be getting involved in. I see some of these things that come out. So you've got to like it, you've got to share it, you've got to comment. Stop. Just stop. Just good content.
Anyway, you've got to like this podcast. You've got to share this podcast.
People have already failed at the first and the second, I think. So it's not a problem. But
don't forget to subscribe, folks. That's
Don't do that. Well, but I genuinely think that that's the thing with social. It's really showing its value. It's pound notes now. And I think it's and I don't know what the numbers are, but it's grown huge. Our followers have grown hugely.
It's engagement, isn't it? Mm. That's probably a topic for the entire other podcast, that really, isn't it?
Mm.
Maybe we will follow up with this one, but for the moment, let's move on. Welcome back to the Lock In podcast. We're at our final session of this episode. Normally we try and look for something a bit more lighthearted and humorous, which is a little bit of a challenge at the moment.
I don't know, I saw that table you made the other day. If you'd like to look on social, Ed the pub man, a ridiculous thing.
I didn't put it on social because you bullied me so much last time about the things I put on social, mostly around my daughter and pets, but it's another story. So let's look at some. I mean, some of the things that we say, this isn't funny or lighthearted, but you see the government were actually considering putting messages out to discourage people from going for a takeaway coffee. And what was it? Don't let a coffee cost a life.
How did Costa feel about it?
Well, that was the... That was the sort of feeling, and that sort of Cafe Nero were quite happy about it. Mm. But that's a little bit heavy-handed, isn't it? If shut them down then, right?
I do find it funny that people need to walk with a coffee. I've seen them around town. I think just have a walk, have a little coffee when you get home.
I mean, what's wrong with the beer?
Little kind of middle class, usually crunchy coffee holders.
But they're bored and they've got nothing to do.
Mm.
People are bored out of their minds. They're just finding stuff to do. You go to Hampstead Heath on a Saturday, it's carnage over there. It's like being at Notting Hill Gate Carnival. Thousands upon people just walking around aimlessly.
Heath, you know what
out of their mind.
Do you know what they need?
A crepe.
What? Crepes.
Hold on, tomato, tomato. Crepes and crepes. Let's get this.
What is it? Crepes or crepes?
Well, let's ask Fred Sirex in the next edition of the Lock In Podcast.
Give it a go, see if he wants
to join us.
I'm sure he's listening, but he'll want to join us. If you're going to do it, this is the thing with the government. It's just don't let businesses operate. It's a bit like at the start of the very first lockdown, wasn't it? Before it was like, don't go to the pub, but we're not going to shut them down. Mm. We just tell people not to go to it. And it's the same with that. It's sort of, I'm with Heath, there's people like to have an objective, so you might go for a walk, stop, get a coffee, and carry it around with you. It's gives life purpose, maybe. I don't know. There's no purpose to life anymore, but are we being unfair?
No, I just
think it's true. I think people are just lost.
I mean, he wants to sell crap, so I mean, that would knock him on the head if they stopped that.
I just think, as always, they're looking at the wrong thing. Deploy that money into getting the grants out, get people doing good stuff. It's not like they've been a bastion of great communication, so,
Well, if they ban coffee, though, I mean, how long before it becomes ban takeaway for everything? It's people going out and getting their food. That's the challenge with it, isn't it?
They can't do it. They can't. If they start going like that, then seriously, and where do you draw the line? A lot of these people, in underprivileged areas can't afford it. They just want to go and get a McDonald's or something. They can't.
Mm.
They just... It's gonna if they go military sort of lockdown even more, like I know we had 1,600 deaths the other day, but it's gonna be a lot more if they start going that militant.
I think who knows? I don't think they've floated the idea again. It was probably a government leak to float the idea and see the reaction and then go maybe.
Yeah, but hold on, this is
coffee too far.
But it all stemmed from the police. Not enforcing the law, but the spirit of the law, if you remember. It wasn't the law itself, it was the spirit of the law. The minute you're being judged by the spirit of the law, we're all screwed.
Well, so, state, isn't it, then?
And the same guy that was telling someone not to jog down, the Thames, all that stuff.
Jogging, you're allowed out to exercise, but you can't jog.
I think also if the government were going to start tightening things, I think they would have done it because obviously Scotland announced that yesterday, and we've announced everything after Scotland have announced it, so clearly there's either another day to come before he follows suit or not. But
It's like we said earlier, it's a bit of a one-upmanship, but maybe Boris has decided not to play that game anymore with
In fairness, I think the vaccine numbers seem pretty good.
Mm.
I think there's been
they're dropping off though, aren't they?
No, but
Well, they're running out of 4 million. You think that's pretty good?
No, I mean,
how many people in this country, James?
The rate of growth. Yeah, well, the only thing I would say,
I mean,
about
he's
it,
just upset because they've moved on to the under 70s and he hasn't only had his.
Well, I was just trying to be positive. Shoot me down. I'm positive for once. This is 10 episodes. The one positive thing I say and I get shot down. That's it.
Oh, come on.
Send them a crap.
It's like, it's a joke. They're like, oh, look, we've done this. They're going to run out of vaccine. They've already said that. Mate, it's going to be a disaster. Like everything else, track and trace, disaster. Closing, lockdown. We're on the third lockdown. Disaster. Mate, this country, the government's a joke.
What did your friend say in New Zealand? Was he talking about this as a plague-ridden isle?
plague island. He sent me a photo of Steak Plissken from Escape from New York and said, you want me to send my man in to get you? Like, tell me. In New Zealand, they think we've just lost it. They go, oh, my God, highest death rate in the world. Oh, my God, are you okay? They've got images of people dying in the streets.
How did he reach you? They don't have Wi-Fi or anything there, do they?
It was carrier pigeons, probably, wasn't it?
Yeah, he's rolling his eyes now. Perfect. So,
right. I mean, it's come to something, isn't it, when we've got smug Kiwis mocking us?
Yeah.
Right. Well, I'll tell you what my friends are doing in New Zealand. They're going to bars and restaurants. That's what they're doing. They're going out, getting drunk.
To pronounce vowels properly, we'll consider you sensibly, OK?
Was it someone in New Zealand giving out vouchers for... Did I read that today? They're giving out vouchers for hospitality. $25.
Where?
Oh, really?
I think it was...
To help out.
I think it was Australia, maybe New Zealand, kind of the same anyway.
Same
but,
place, yeah.
That's a lot of Big Macs back home.
Yeah.
I mean, thinking you said Met Police enforcing. I mean, the interesting thing we saw this week was apparently the Met 9 police officers from the Met Police Force having a sit-down meal in a cafe at the beginning of January. They apparently were having their breakfast, which... was interesting.
What did they do? Did they knock on the door and say, all right, mate, open up for breakfast or we'll close you down? It doesn't make sense.
I mean, you've got to wonder, you've got to wonder, did they bully the operator into it or was the operator currying favour? I mean...
Do you know what I mean? Like, is he opening illegally anyway and then they catch him and say, well, we'll let you off, we cook your breakfast, if you cook us breakfast? Doesn't make sense.
Oh, that's a theory I hadn't thought of. Maybe they did, yeah.
Just a clarification, New South Wales, it was every resident gets four $25 vouchers.
$100.
Well done. That's two vouchers to be used in restaurants, cafes and bars, and two to be used in entertainment venues.
Yeah.
Just saying.
So the New Zealanders will be enjoying that then?
New South Wales
is in Australia. New South Wales is in Australia. I know that's
you,
hard to
you
get
say potato.
It's a different country.
Tomato,
different
tomato.
Different country.
That's correct. No, you say that, Heath. You say that. No one believes you.
No one believes you. Empire.
No one believes
you. Lost the empire. You didn't know what you had. You couldn't keep track. That's where we fell apart.
Didn't see this coming.
Australia, is that the same thing? What's this place called the Americas? What are the Americas? I don't worry about it. We don't need them anymore. No wonder you're falling apart. Now you're not even part of Europe. It's all fucking gone wrong. You've lost your minds. Look, we're okay. We're leading the world at deaths. We're on our own country. We're the winners. Can't get food in the country, but we're winning. Freedom.
But look at all the fish are exported.
When's Heath moving back to New Zealand?
Soon, I hope.
Okay, cool.
Back in.
Yeah, no, we know that. It's, there's orders and everything. I think they'll maybe draw a line under this one after that outburst that I'll probably have to edit out. So we shall see. That is for now. So that is it. Thank you for listening. Stay safe. It is goodbye from Heath, James and myself. Don't forget to like, subscribe and spread the word on social. What was it you said earlier, James? Like, share... All that kind of stuff. It's all good.
Yeah.
It's all good. Leave your comments. Send us your thoughts. Ask us any questions. We would love to hear from you. For now, we will be back next week with more ruminations on the pub scene.